From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Maureen McCollum. It won't ever be considered the cradle of civilization, but there's still a rich history of people who inhabited the Upper Mississippi River region thousands of years ago. Dr. Guy Gibbon is a professor emeritus of anthropology at the University of Minnesota, who wrote a book that examines that history, titled Archaeology of Minnesota. The Milwaukee native spoke earlier this fall at UW-La Crosse, and Wisconsin Public Radio's John Davis had a chance to interview him about his work, which includes one of the first archaeological digs at the Midway site in Onalaska in the mid-1960s.
I received my master's and PhD degrees from the University of Wisconsin-Madison, where I worked on Wisconsin archaeological sites. I did my master's on a site in Onalaska, just north of here. I've had very close connections over the years with the people at MVAC, many of whom are now retiring. I taught one year at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee, and I thought I'd be doing Wisconsin archaeology my whole life, and somehow I ended up at Minnesota, and I've been up there since 1973. I've written a bunch of books, mainly, and this is interesting, if you get your career in a research institution, your career takes a different direction. And I keep thinking if I had been at Milwaukee, my career would have been different, you know. Yeah. In Minnesota, you wrote lots of books, and that's what I did. Mm-hmm. So I've been retired about 2 years.
Talk a little bit about your experience getting your master's degree in Onalaska. What was that archaeological dig all about?
I had been an undergraduate for 2 years at Madison, so I had worked in the archaeology lab. And as I was starting my master's program, my advisor, Dr. David Barris, you know, had some questions at the time that was thought that the Oneota appeared during what's called the Little Ice Age. You know, things are getting colder, and he had a dispute with another archaeologist about how big sites were. Did people fragment into little groups, etc.? And so he called me into his office and said, I want you to get a car and some students and go out and, you know, look at this site. And in those days, you know, La Crosse was, you know, like Siberia, because, you know, none of the big freeways were there at the time. Mm. And it was a wonderful experience. We excavated in the fall. We excavated in a site called the Midway site in Onalaska. And what was, in retrospect, a lot of that site's been destroyed, I believe, for a quarry, you know. So it was just kind of happenstance that we happened to work in that site before it was destroyed. And I wrote a big report on it and, you know, learned a lot about Oneota. And in those days, there was no MVAC. People didn't realize, the superabundance of sites. The La Crosse area, it's part of what's called the Gorge of the Upper Mississippi. You know, we've learned over the time with Jim Gallagher's work and Connie and other people that just one of the downsides, if I can say that a little bit, is just like the Native Americans, you know, loved the area, et cetera, and made their villages in certain places, of course, you know, our ancestors liked the same places. And so a lot of these sites are under streets. And, you know, Kathy Stevenson right now is working up in Onalaska, you know, in an urban setting. But it was a wonderful setting way back when, and it still is. One thing about working in Oneota sites is that you retrieve large amounts of material. And there are lots of what we call features, like storage pits underground and house foundations and things. And after I had worked on Oneota up in Onalaska, I said, well, why wasn't I smart enough to pick an earlier culture like what we call the Archaic, where maybe I'd find 3 projectile points and 7 chips and I could write a whole master's thesis on it. On the other hand, the real abundance of material in these sites can really tell you a lot about people's lifeways. And, this was a time when people were, you know, living in area. Earlier on, you know, for thousands of years, people lived in very small groups and were fairly mobile. And so their archaeological remains are, most cases, practically invisible. You know, you just can't find them. In southern Minnesota, particularly southwestern Minnesota, there was so much buildup of soil that the site's maybe 10 feet underground or more. You know what I mean? So these sites we're talking about now date from, let's say, 1300 to historic contact, you know, 1650 or 1700 in this area. And so they're near the surface, lots of material, lots of bone. So we can really learn a lot. And, of course, I spent lots and lots and lots of time in the lab, you know, working on this material. Part of the argument that I went to kind of resolve was, were these kind of larger sites or were they just repeated occupation by a family or two? And, you know, this was a fairly large site, and, you know, we excavated in different parts of the site. And basically what we found was that the stone material and everything was pretty similar. And so we concluded that this was probably a larger site.
Talk a little bit about the first people who inhabited Minnesota.
Let me start by saying that there are various ways to date the earliest people, and that's important. And we use a radiocarbon dating technique primarily. And the problem with radiocarbon dating is the older the dates get, the more error there is with true calendar dates, okay? Mm-hmm. And so one thing I do in my book is there's something called calibration where you make that adjustment to calendar dates. And they used to say that, well, people peered in Minnesota maybe at 11,000 B.C., something like that. And now we say that they lived in the state about 13,000 years. So, mm-hmm. so the one thing is that they probably came in much earlier. And as far as we can tell, that there are very small numbers of people, and that they primarily were trying to encounter game. They lived off of game in our area. About all we can see is some of their projectile points. And I call these people in the book a pioneer foragers. You know, they're the very first people to enter this area. And, you know, people forget, you know, how big a state like Minnesota is. We're so used to how big the United States is. And I tell my students that Minnesota is just about as big as England, Scotland, and Wales put together. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So you look at a world map and you look at that and you get an idea of how big this is. So you have this big area. You have a very few number of archaeologists. You know what I mean? And so my feeling is, to answer your question, is that these were, you know, pioneer foragers who entered. We don't know if they were snowbirds who wintered in La Crosse, maybe, and then moved north. The other thing I think is important is, you know, people, when they look for archaeological remains, they look at the present environment, and they say, well, if I was going to camp or if I was going to hunt, I'd go here. And we have to remember that we're talking about an ice age environment. I mean, people entered Wisconsin and Minnesota at the end of the ice age. You know what I mean? And so there are still glaciers in the north. The whole forest were quite different. They were closed spruce forests, which is kind of a boreal forest, except it's further south. It didn't have the abundance, basically, of food resources that you find in La Crosse area today, for example, you know.
We're seeing inhabitants about the time that the Ice Age is coming to an end.
Yeah, I would say basically that people are here maybe 1,000 years before the. It's a little misleading to talk about the end of the Ice Age,
right?
Because it was more of a process. You know, it ended earlier in some areas, and the further north you go, it went on and on and on. Okay.
But how do you define the people who inhabited Minnesota for those first 12,500 years?
One problem, obvious problem we have, is to say, who were they? You know what I mean? Were they? If you look at early historic Minnesota, you know, if you look at historic Minnesota, basically the Ojibwe, or what we call Anishinaabe, you know, entered during the historic period. And before that, you know, it was mainly Dakota, Lakota people in the Northwoods. And then to the south, there were people who became Iowa and perhaps Odo. So these were all Siouan-speaking peoples. And the question is, well, how far back does that go? You know what I mean? Because when you work with Native people, you know, they want to know. You know, where did they come from? What were their sites? Things like this. And so the best thing is to say that a lot of these early people are Native Americans for sure, though some people claim we have a Scandinavian or two running around the state. Mm-hmm. And they're basically, we don't know who they were, you know. What I can say is a little bit about their changing LifeWay, if I can, because we think basically for the first, over 8,000 years, these were very small family groups, who were moving across the landscape in the interior looking for game. What happened through time is a population slowly grew. And it was no longer possible just to roam anywhere because that was somebody else's area. And as population grew, people found that they couldn't live just by a focus on hunting. And so they started to diversify. I want to say 4,000 years ago, they started to diversify and they started to use more wild rice and fish and small animals and things like this. And this is when archaeological sites that we see prominently began to be formed. Because they were living more permanently around lakes and rivers. But that earlier kind of roaming life way, basically, as I say, lasted for over 8,000 years. It was very interesting.
How do things like the weather and climate and the natural resources help shape civilization in the state of Minnesota?
See, that's a good question. And that's at the very basis of what I call a life way approach. Because, and if you read a book about North American archaeology, they have various kinds of phases. They talk about something like the Archaic, and there's a date when it ended, and they talk about the woodland, there's a date when it ended, and things like this. And really, if you take a state as big as Wisconsin or as big as Minnesota, with such a varied environment. I mean, Minnesota has a prairie off in the west. It's drier in the west. You go way up north and you're almost in boreal forest, things like this. We can't just say that all these people had the same life way because they were basically responding to the local resources that they could, have access to. And so you're not going to expect, for example, a life way in southern Wisconsin to be the same as something in Alabama or Louisiana where they have a 12-month growing season. Mm-hmm. And up here, you have a 6 or 7 month growing season. A life way approach is really, firmly based in understanding the local climate, understanding the local animals and plants, things like this. In a state like Minnesota, which I wrote a book about, so I say more about it, is that we see that these changes that I've been talking about towards intensification, having different kind of camps and things like this, these things appear at quite different times in different parts of the state. For example, central Minnesota, which is the lower zone of what we call the North Woods, was by far the most intensely occupied part of Minnesota. Southern Minnesota, had some people, but not many. Mm-hmm. And so we see all of this intensification in places like the Headwaters area up in Minnesota much earlier. Just to emphasize these differences, I had a four kind of period development of these phases of lifeways, and the fourth one is called a tribal lifeway, where people are living in bigger villages and things like this, and that doesn't appear in Minnesota until after 1,000 years ago, and I think tribes appeared in places like Alabama, Louisiana, Mississippi, in the late Archaic. So I'm talking about 4,000 or 5,000 years ago.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio La Crosse. I'm John Davis. We're talking about the archaeology of the Upper Mississippi River region with Dr. Guy Gibbon. He's a professor emeritus of anthropology at the University of Minnesota and the author of several books, including The Archaeology of Minnesota. We've been talking a lot about thousands of years ago, but just for a reference, when did the first European settlers land in the state of Minnesota?
Well, there's a difference between settlers and contact. Okay. Because, of course, about 1650, we have people like Duluth and Radisson and people like this who basically are coming across Lake Superior, and making some contact, but really not having. Father Hennepin, for example, and I forget the exact date, but let's say 1680, supposedly was captured along the Mississippi River, not far from here, and actually taken up to Lake Mille Lacs in central Minnesota, and then supposedly kept capture there. But we're not sure because these people all wanted to write great best-selling books, and so they tended to romanticize what actually happened. And then after that, we have a long period of French and then English fur traders. The first American settlement in Minnesota was a military one. And this was what's called Fort Snelling at the juncture of the Mississippi and Minnesota rivers. And then there were a series of treaties. The first one was about 1837. If I remember, there was another one maybe at 1857 that started to open the state up, and that's when the settlers came in.
The book defines southeastern Minnesota as a region.
Yep, that's right.
How was that different back then?
Of course, there's a best-selling book by MVAC, by Ernie Bossart and Jim Thieler, you know, on the archaeology of this region, the upper Mississippi River Valley. And one thing they say in the book is, you know, that the archaeology north of La Crosse is practically unknown. And, of course, you know, that enters into southeastern Minnesota. And so when I wrote that section of the book, and, of course, if you look at the archaeological culture, you know, the pottery and things like this, it's that part of Minnesota that's most similar, you know, to the area south of La Crosse. And if you go to southwestern Minnesota or northern central Minnesota, you find that it's so different, you know, that we can't compare it. So what I did in the book, and there are very scant remains in southeastern Minnesota. I mean, just a few sites compared to what you find in Prairie du Chien and areas south of La Crosse. To me, it's been a kind of a puzzle. It wasn't until about 1,000 years ago when these tribal groups came that you started to find substantial settlements in southeastern Minnesota.
You mentioned the size of the state of Minnesota. What type of research in archaeological digs are you basing this on? Is there a good percentage of the state of Minnesota that's been explored by archaeologists?
Basically, when you have cultural resource management archaeology, that is responding to state and federal legislation, you know, you go where there's a problem, right? Mm-hmm. Once that kind of state and federal mandated archaeology started, people are looking at in areas of Minnesota that the professional academic archaeologists didn't look at. You know, we went to the best places, if I can say that, Mille Lac, the Headwaters Lakes, Rainy River. And so I would say that more areas of Minnesota have been explored in the last 20 years than the earlier 50. There's a downside to all this, however, and that is that it's not the job of a cultural resource management archaeologist to actually write a history of Minnesota archaeology. You know, they write a report for the contractor, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so there are lots and lots of reports on this, and in many cases it's difficult to synthesize just because it's all over the place.
You've kind of touched on this, but the archaeology of this part of the state, the state of Wisconsin, I should say, is very similar to southeastern Minnesota.
In the book, I made it seem so. So there's kind of a difference, you know. If I look at the scant remains in southeastern Minnesota, they most resemble, you know, what we find down here. And so what I did was, when I described the various periods, I looked at the work that MVAC people have done, you know, and I borrowed a lot of their ideas. And I say that repeatedly throughout the book, you know, that this is probably what it was like. You know what I mean? And it's still a puzzle to me why we don't find a greater numbers of people in southeastern Minnesota than you find south of La Crosse. So, you know, it gives us something to think about.
How does what we've learned about the archaeology of Minnesota relate to today's Minnesota?
A lot of our graduate students in our program up at University of Minnesota, you know, study contemporary Native American groups, you know, such as the Ojibwe or Lakota groups and things like this. This isn't answering your question specifically, but really one of the things that is interesting is how Native American groups are trying to preserve their traditional life ways in a commercial present-day Minnesota or Wisconsin. You know what I mean? So that's very important. We can look at the past, and I can look at their life ways, and then I can say, well, how are they trying to survive? Some of them, are doing quite well. Particularly with casinos in the southern part of the state. But Ojibwe groups up at White Earth and places like that and kind of north-central Minnesota that are trying to remain what are called subsistence people where they're not farmers and things like this. So I'm not answering your question exactly. The other thing, of course, is the natural environment. You know, one thing we can see is how the impact of settlers and that has really changed the environment.
Dr. Guy Gibbon is a professor emeritus of anthropology at the University of Minnesota. He was at UW-La Crosse earlier this fall. He was interviewed by Wisconsin Public Radio's John Davis about his book, Archaeology of Minnesota, tracing the history of people who lived in the state some 13,000 years ago. Thanks for listening to Newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, I'm Maureen McCollum. Our production team includes John Gatto, Mary Meehan Strube, and our senior producer, John Davis. To hear archives of this or other recent editions of Newsmakers, visit our website at wpr.org/newsmakers. You'll also find extended interviews and photos. And if you'd like to comment on our program, or if you have a suggestion for future shows, you'll also find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. You can also find Newsmakers on Facebook, updates on future shows, links to our archives, and more. Like us on Facebook at WPR Newsmakers.